Hello. This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 29th of November. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Michael Turner and Lorna Chorley. I'm your presenter, Vara Williams, and your readers today are Jean Carswell.
Hello.
Michael Wyard.
Hello.
And John Regan.
Hello.
So, now we start with what's on. Christmas begins with carols and festive music for choir, audience and brass from the Wainfleet Singers in Winchester Cathedral on Saturday the 7th of December at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are from £10 and on sale from the Cathedral box office, telephone 01962 857 275. And since I'm going on to another Winchester Cathedral thing, I'll repeat it then. Because again, in Winchester Cathedral, on Friday the 13th of December at 7 p.m, Dame Kiri Tekanawa will join Alan Titchmarsh and Winchester Cathedral Choir at the annual Lord Lieutenant's Carol Concert. Tickets are priced from £15 for a restricted or no-view seat up to £45 and are on sale at the Cathedral Visitors Centre or by telephoning the Cathedral box office, and I'll repeat the number, 01962 857 275. The two National Trust houses near Winchester are all decked up for Christmas. Hinton Ampner will have carol singers, bell ringers, and Father Christmas will be dropping in from now until the 8th of December between 10 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. And Mottisfont Abbey invites you to the Swan Queen's Ball with a magical quest trail, beautiful ball gowns and sparkling trees all over the Christmas season from 10 a.m. to dusk. I like that, dusk. And then I had to get my magnifying glass out to see what's on at the Everyman Cinema in Winchester. The advertisements got so small. The choice is either Saving Mr. Banks, about how Walt Disney persuaded P.L. Travers to allow him to make Mary Poppins, and The Hunger Games, Catching Fire, on the other screen. And the box office number for the Everyman Cinema is 0871 906 9090. That's 0871 906 9090. Now, the one announcement I've got, really, is lighting up time ends today, Friday the 29th of November, at 7:45 a.m. and begins at 4 minutes past 4 in the afternoon. On Wednesday the 4th of December, it ends at 8 minutes to 8 in the morning and begins again at 4 minutes past 4 in the afternoon. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or you, if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That's 01962 862 826. And now we come to the main headlines of the Hampshire Chronicle this week. And they are, go back to the drawing board for River Park, concern as more old folk die in winter, and Christmas gets its skates on. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Jean?
Yes, go back to the drawing board. Campaigners' anger after alternative options for River Park not made public. Campaigners in Winchester are furious that civic chiefs have withheld alternative options for a new leisure centre. The current exhibition by the City Council outlines four options for replacing the River Park Leisure Centre, including one which would involve building on playing fields. The City Council Cabinet agreed in September that expanding onto the park was the preferred option. A packed meeting attended by 200 people on Monday heard that Council Leader Keith Wood was presented with architect's drawings which would not require taking any parkland. Despite calls for greater transparency from action group Save the Rec, the alternatives were not made public. Alex Perrin, a coach at Winchester Rugby Club, based at North Wall, said, "The council have paid, using our money, for more options to be produced. And I know Keith Wood had those options and was showing them around in the Green Man pub 3 weeks ago. But for whatever reason, he has not put them forward for public consultation. I'm very angry." Martin Wilson said, "Three of us met Keith Wood at the Green Man pub, and during that time he came up with some diagrams, and there are a number of other options for the council. At least two of them showed there was no need to build over the chalk stream. Two of them were exclusively building on the current footprint of the leisure centre. It's frustrating that the options have not been brought to the table as we would expect to see. We do not want hidden agendas." Savills was asked by council bosses to come up with proposals based on two options: building on the fields adjacent to the leisure centre or building at Bar End. Many councillors were unaware that Councillor Wood had been looking at alternative options not involving the loss of fields at River Park. Councillor Jane Rutter said, "I had no idea there were other proposals, and I think we should have discussed them all." Councillor Brian Collins said, "I have not seen them. I think the consultation has been handled in the wrong way. Doing it in an open way, you get a consensus, and you build up the picture in a more rational way." A spokesman for the City Council said it had commissioned architects Design Engine to produce drawings for the exhibition. "We asked them to play around with options about how it would look on the current site. They did it," an image of a new facility within the centre's current bounds, "as part of that. They were not options as such. It was an option that we did not think was viable. To build it on the same space would mean the loss of leisure centre provision for 2 or 3 years." There has been also criticism of the quality of the reports. Tony Pryor, 66, of Worthy Road, the former chief executive of an engineering consortium, said they lacked sufficient detail. "This is not a consulting engineer's report. I think that document is appalling. It is a qualitative report based on opinion and assertion. 2 weeks' work and you could find out where people travel from, and they haven't done it." At the meeting on Monday at Winchester Rugby Club, an informal vote saw a unanimous show of hands in favour of the council going back to the drawing board.
Concern as more old folk die in winter. Latest figures show county is joint highest in the UK. More fears have been raised over the safety of Hampshire's elderly after the number of winter deaths rose again. The South East, including Hampshire, saw 4,600 excess or preventable deaths due to cold weather last year, an increase of almost 10% since 2012, and the joint highest in the UK with the North East. It comes as the number of deaths nationally has rocketed by almost 30% to 31,100 from 25,000 in 2012, according to the Office for National Statistics. Rick Smith, chief executive of Hampshire Age Concern, said the numbers were shocking. He said, "We think there's a problem in rural Hampshire, where there are pockets of isolation. When it's cold, and they cannot afford to heat their homes and are isolated, they may not see anyone for days or weeks, and they become really vulnerable." The percentage rise in the South East may not be as high as elsewhere, but it's an increase that we should not be seeing. Cold weather helps raise blood pressure, which increases risk of heart attacks and strokes. Pamela Hatch, who has her photograph here in the Chronicle, who's 80 years old, of Old Alresford, says she faces a constant struggle to keep warm in winter. She said, I'm in a wheelchair, so it's a challenge to move around indoors to keep warm. I had a balance problem and then suffered a fall, so my task is now to build up my confidence to walk unaided again. My husband and I do use the central heating, but we have a big house and there is no point heating four bedrooms if they aren't being used. We tend to use an electric fire, which I hope is a lot cheaper. Mrs. Hatch, a retired secretary, said that she and her husband receive £150 each in winter fuel allowances, and she added, "Rising prices are a big concern for me. So far, we have coped, but because it hasn't been too cold. But if it gets worse, we only have our pensions to rely on." But Mr. Smith added, campaigns like the county council's hitting the cold spots were helping. He said, "I think we're doing a lot right in Hampshire, and let us not underestimate how good we are at getting the message out to people. But we do need more money so we can provide these services. The county has launched a campaign, and it's called the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Community Foundation for Surviving Winter, calling for people to donate their winter fuel payment, if they are able, to help the elderly and vulnerable." Mr. Smith praised the campaign. "I'm totally for this. If you have money, whether it's winter fuel payment or even your Christmas bonus, and you can spare it, then please help. Age Concern is encouraging people to stay mobile, ensure that they have hot food and drinks, and arrange visits and activities with family and friends."
And this article's headed, "Christmas Gets Its Skates On." I-star Robin Cousins brought a sparkle to Winchester's Christmas offerings when he opened the city's ice rink last Thursday. The Olympic champion and Dancing on Ice judge showcased dancers from his group, Cousins Entertainment, who wowed the crowd with their moves on the rink. Robin told the crowd, "This is the 8th year in partnership with the Cathedral and we're thrilled to be here." Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Ernie Jeffs, officially declared the celebrations open and read part of the Christmas story from St Luke. It was also the start of the city's ever-popular traditional Christmas market. Now in its 9th year, the market in Cathedral Close is considered amongst the best in the UK and features around 100 German-style wooden chalets. Thousands of shoppers jostled for early bird gifts, snapped up bargains, or just soaked up the atmosphere with a glass of mulled wine. At the end of the opening ceremony, attention shifted from the ice to the sky as fireworks were launched from the cathedral roof. The event acted as the curtain raiser for the cathedral's festive season, as the High Street Lantern Parade has been moved to its own night, and that was just November the 28th. An estimated 300,000 people will visit over the coming weeks, spelling big business for the city. Catherine Turnus, Winchester Business Improvement District Manager, said, "What makes Winchester stand out from the rest is that we have the whole package. It's not just the events, but the shops. We have such a variety that it allows people to get gifts for anybody and everybody. You can't beat this city when the lights come on and it's dark. It's just beautiful," she said. Last week, the Christmas lights switch on saw thousands gather to dance and cheer as 25,000 lights illuminated the High Street. The rink will be open until January the 5th from 11 a.m. to 7:30 p.m, closing only for Christmas Day. And the cathedral will also host the Christmas story, told with props and puppets, from December 16th to the 20th. From 12 until 12:15 p.m. A live nativity will be held every Sunday until December the 22nd, between 10 o'clock in the morning and 6 o'clock in the evening. The market will be open every day from 10 a.m, closing at 6 p.m. from Sundays to Wednesdays, and until 7:30 p.m. on Thursdays, Fridays and Saturdays. The Lantern Parade started at the Great Hall at 6 o'clock and finished in the Cathedral Outer Close, and featured hundreds of lanterns assembled and decorated by families. And there are three photographs to accompany that piece. First of all, the Dean of the Cathedral and the Mayor, Councillor Ernie Jeffs, officially opening proceedings, and then a picture of already lots of people circulating around by the market stalls, and then a young lady taking the first dance on the ice rink.
That concludes the headlines, and now we continue with the death notices. Bessie, Joan Bessie, on the 21st of November, aged 96. Clark, George Clark, on the 26th of November, aged 81. Howe, Daphne Howe, at Dunwood Manor Nursing Home, Romsey, aged 92. Kirchhoff, Dorothy Kirchhoff, at West Holm Nursing Home, aged 84. Robinson, Percy Robinson, in his sleep, on the 15th of November, aged 87. And finally, Stansbridge, Kenneth Stansbridge, in hospital, on the 17th of November, aged 84. And now we go over to Jean for Christian comment, please.
A Christian comment is written this week by Mary Gray and headed The Coming of Advent and the Coming of Peace. As we draw near to Advent, you would think Christmas was here already, with trees and lights having arrived, and the ever-pervading compulsion to shop till you drop. Thoughts move to the theme of peacemaking. Next Sunday, Christians will read the famous Isaiah text of the coming Messiah, who will hammer their swords into plowshares. This takes on a more urgent meaning for me as I'm writing this from Jerusalem. People here, Jews, Christians and Muslims, are longing for peace, but the peace talks appear to have lost momentum, perhaps because eyes are turned to the Syrian conflict. But my concern focuses today on one area where peace and justice are urgently needed. This is not an Israeli-Palestinian conflict as such, but concerns the Arab Bedouin, who are actually Israeli citizens. By the PROAP plan, the Israeli government, parliament, Knesset, has agreed to displace 70,000 Bedouin from 35 unrecognized villages. Unrecognized means that these villages, many of which predate 1948, even as far back as the Ottoman Empire, are deprived of electricity, water, schools, and sewage disposal. The reason is that Israel wants the land and considers that the Bedouin are strangers with no rights. In some cases, they are referred to as invaders because the village is unrecognized and not on the map. Visiting Bedouin communities, you are immediately struck by what being unrecognized means. The Negev is desert country, but no beautiful rolling sand dunes greet the visitor. These villages cluster on hilly sand terrain, but here are no crops. It is, of course, November, and scarcely any sheep grazing. In many cases, the land has been confiscated, so there is no grazing for the animals. The village buildings are constructed mostly from sheets of corrugated iron, giving an air of dreary poverty. The people are forced to buy water from the Israelis. Despite all this, we were greeted with the traditional hospitality of the Bedouin people. Sitting on colourful rugs and cushions, we were served delicious traditional food and heard the stories of a people afraid for their very survival and their longings to live with dignity. These longings merge harmoniously with Advent longings for peace. Our Bedouin hosts were clear that their issues are not with ordinary Israelis. They have very good relations with their neighbours, but with an unjust government policy. We too have issues with evictions. Do we have enough compassion to reach out to an ancient people of the Holy Land, for whom this law entails a life which is no life?
Now we go on with letters to the editor, and the first letters read by Michael, please.
It comes from Nicholas Kerwin in Ilex Close, Kingsworthy, and it's headed, "Homes will make congestion worse." Sir, Tesco Express in Springvale Road, Kingsworthy, is a popular and useful small supermarket that serves the whole village. Unfortunately, it doesn't have sufficient space in its car park for all its shoppers at busy periods, and accordingly, when the car park is full, shoppers park their cars in nearby Hook Pit Farm Lane. This reduces traffic flow in that road to one lane at its junction with Springvale Road, making it difficult for traffic getting in and out of the local estate. One of the proposed solutions is yellow lines preventing parking in the immediate vicinity of the Tesco car park. If it were successful, it would simply drive shoppers to park their cars further up Hook Pit Farm Lane and Cundall Way, causing congestion elsewhere. However, I doubt yellow lines would be successful. Street parking restrictions work in towns where drivers need to park for extended periods and there are traffic wardens on patrol. Kingsworthy is not patrolled by wardens, and nearly all the cars which cause congestion outside Tesco Express are left by shoppers who just nip in for a few minutes. The risk of getting caught parked on yellow lines would be minimal, so most drivers would take the risk. To make matters worse, Drew Smith, a building 25 dwellings on the top field of Hook Pit Farm Lane, and want to build a further 83 dwellings, making a total of 108. The 25 homes under construction will exacerbate congestion, but the proposed additional 83 new ones will make the bottleneck outside Tesco unmanageable. City planners need to give serious consideration to this further development of Topfield, when there seem to be much better sites in Kingsworthy that could take the proposed housing. Nicholas Kerwin, Ilex Close.
And here's another letter from a resident of Ilex Close in Kingsworthy expressing concerns about events in the village. It's headed, "Desecrating Another Area." Sir, as residents of Kingsworthy for 22 years, we are appalled at the proposal by Drew Smith to build 83 houses on the top field off Hook Pit Farm Lane. The builders are in the process of building 25 homes at the far corner of the field, which are totally out of character for the area and have caused much resentment and anger to ourselves and the residents of this small rural area in the village. Drew Smith have altered the plans, taking away the footpaths which have been long established and extending their development further than originally planned into the field. They've uprooted established trees which were originally protected and altered the area so drastically that most agree the development is overbearing and an eyesore. I have photographs of the desecration of these trees, which illustrates that they have scant regard for the natural feel of the landscape. The top field is an area of natural beauty, which will be eroded by Drew Smith if they're granted permission to build more houses. This area is home to protected and endangered species. We have dormice, slow worms, many varieties of birds and bats roosting in the trees on the field. The rural aspect of the village will be lost at this point, and the infrastructure will not accommodate more houses in this area of the village. We would urge the Hampshire Chronicle to support us in our plight, to establish this area as a village green, to preserve this for generations to come, and not allow heavy-handed developers to desecrate yet another area of Winchester as they've done to Barton Farm. And that's from Celia and Mike Butters of Ilex Close Kingsworthy.
Chris Gillam writes, "Make town centres fit for people." Sir, just when the City Council seems prepared to take some small measure to improve living conditions on our streets, it seems that a road lobby organisation feels entitled to tell us what it thinks is good for us. The AA sees fit to warn against reducing speed on Winchester roads, telling us we need to keep arterial routes as they are so that traffic flows efficiently. Leaving aside the obvious flaw in the assumption that a 20-mile-per-hour limit would make traffic flow less efficiently, why, 45 years after the Buchanan report, is the AA still living in a world where it thinks civilised towns need or should have arterial roads? It is a pity that your editorial so reflects the views of the AA and councillors Tatt and Saunders on this matter. It ignores all the very considerable evidence that such schemes are beneficial. Studies all over Europe show that they reduce the number and seriousness of accidents, and that they have other health benefits in increases in cycling and walking. The objection that they cannot or will not be enforced is explicitly contradicted by the Association of Chief Police Officers. Councillor Weston has got this right, but I am baffled by Councillor Saunders' reference to fiscal conservatism as a reason for discarding the evidence. If fiscal conservatism means anything, it should be that people pay the true cost of what they do. Car drivers dominating the spaces in a town centre are doing so at the cost of everyone else. Cost in health, quality of life, and economic welfare. 45 years after Buchanan, it is past time to civilise our town centres and make them fit for people. Charles Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
Peter Hargraves writes, saying that tweeting MPs set bad example. Sir, Prime Minister David Cameron set a bad example when he allowed a Twitter message to intervene in a debate on the last Prime Minister Question Time. Mobiles, whether we like it or not, are being used in cars, on trains and buses, and even in theatres and restaurants. The last thing the public needs is for this dreadful practice to infiltrate the seat of British democracy. It was noticeable that Steve Brine, MP, bagged his usual spot behind the Prime Minister, only by arriving early for Prime Minister questions and placing his prayer card, reserving a seat, to ensure that every time the camera focused on the Prime Minister, he would also be in focus for his Winchester constituents to see. After asking a question, Mr. Brine sat down and started to play with his mobile, totally ignoring questions being put to the Prime Minister and his answers, to which he should have been listening. The use of mobiles by MPs in parliamentary debating chambers should never be allowed, and those who indulge themselves in this practice set a bad example to all those who ignore improper use. The letter comes from Peter Hargraves, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
And here's Jeff Ward making a similar comment about MPs. Letters headed, MPs in no position to criticise the BBC. Sir, I find it somewhat ironic that MPs feel they can criticise the culture of entitlement at the BBC. The words duck house and moat cleaning, amongst others, including pot, kettle and black, spring to mind. And remember, MPs are paid out of the public purse also. That's from Jeff Ward in Walton Place in Winchester.
Giving birth can be risky business, says Pip Billington. Sir, it is a terrible idea to centralise consultant-led maternity care, Chronicle, November the 21st. Winchester, Andover and Basingstoke are too far away from each other to risk having to transport a newborn baby or a distressed delivery. The first minutes of a baby's life are critical, and if an error is made or there is delay in specialised treatment, the outcome is too devastating to risk. I know from my own experience that babies can arrive extremely quickly. A half-hour drive would have left me giving birth somewhere on the M3 or A34. Having a baby might be the most natural thing in the world, but it is also risky and can be dangerous for both mother and child. So can we apply a bit of common sense here, please? Pip Billington, Kingsgate Road, Winchester.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Looking back now, we begin with the news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Michael.
200 years ago, November the 29th, 1813, Allied victory at Leipzig. The dispatch from Lord Cathcart, dated Leipzig, October 19th, states the victory of the Allies to have been very complete, that Bonaparte left Leipzig at 10 o'clock that morning with such precipitation and disorder that Generals Regnier, Lauriston, Bertrand, etc. were taken in the city or near it. The whole plain is covered with bodies of dead men and horses, and the ruins of the villages are full of heaps of dead and dying.
And now 100 years ago, November the 29th, 1913, and we first hear about the first hanging in Winchester for 10 years. Until Wednesday of the present week, when Augustus John Penny, 30 years of age, was hanged for the murder of his mother, Mary Matilda Penny, at Copythorne in the New Forest, a period of precisely 10 years had elapsed since the convict had suffered the extreme penalty of the law at Winchester Prison. Looking back at the files of Hampshire Chronicle, one cannot but be struck by the callous indifference to life which prevailed in old times. We read of human beings being turned off, as it is described, in Winchester, in batches of 3, 4, or even 5, for sheep-stealing and similar trivial offences. The last public execution at Winchester Prison took place on January the 8th, 1856. The drop at that time was erected over the main entrance to the prison from Romsey Road, and it was no unusual thing for a crowd of between 5,000 and 6,000 people to assemble from all parts. And now we hear of the doings of the Winchester Women's Suffrage Society. The members of the society have reason to congratulate themselves on the success of the Sweated Industries exhibition, which was held at the Guildhall on November the 20th. Our army and navy are drawn chiefly from the working classes, and yet how are men whose childhood is spent in such dire poverty to be fit, physically and mentally, for defending or building up the empire? When one tries to realise that there are thousands and thousands of such poor women as sat in our Guildhall, acres of streets inhabited by them, toiling hour after hour, week after week, year after year, for their wretched pay. One wonders if indeed, quote, Christianity is a colossal failure.
And 50 years ago, on November the 30th, 1963, Tower Street car park approved. Approval in principle was given by Hampshire County Council in Winchester on Monday to the development of the Sussex Street and Tower Street area of Winchester by a three-tier car park topped by a four-storey office building containing accommodation for County Council staff, a new County Fire Service headquarters and County Council canteen facilities at an estimated gross cost of £970,000. The council also agreed to the making of a compulsory purchase order for the acquisition of 16 properties in Sussex Street and Tower Street, which are required for the scheme. Secondly, letter to the editor. Sir, your account of the meeting at North Baddesley about the gypsy problem makes sad ending. As so often happens when emotions take control over reason, a fundamental fallacy bedevils the argument. I was amazed myself when I visited the Baddesley site. In the centre of a sea of mud, 6 inches deep, stood a caravan. I waded to it, climbed the steps and looked inside. It was spotless. I have seldom seen a house look cleaner. Anyone who in such conditions, without water, electricity or drainage, can keep a caravan so well, would have little to learn about housecraft.
25 years ago, November the 25th, 1988, Brown urged to support unionists. Local teachers have called on Winchester and Alton MP John Brown to support trade unionists sacked from GCHQ. In a letter to the MP, the Winchester and District Teachers Association says it can see no reason why trade union membership should be a threat to national security and accuses the government of curtailing a fundamental civil liberty. In the letter, Mr. Nigel Fox says, "It is worth remembering that even when the taking of industrial action was felt to be necessary by trade unionists at GCHQ in 1979 and 1981, the Defence Secretary of the day admitted that the GCHQ operations, which safeguarded national security, were allowed to function without interruption."
And now we have Chronicle comment, followed from John, followed by first person from Jean.
And here the Winchester Hampshire Chronicle is telling us what they think about how the City Council's dealt with the River Park Leisure Centre issue. And it's headed, "This consultation looks a sham." It is difficult to know quite what Winchester City Council is getting up to in its chronic mishandling of the River Park Leisure Centre issue. That 200 people turned up to a public meeting organised by Save the Rec speaks volumes for the way many people feel it's been handled. Any reasonable person might have some sympathy for the council wrestling with a difficult decision if it did not carry on shooting itself in the foot. We learned from the meeting that City Council Keith Wood discussed two more options with a group of residents in the Green Man pub a few weeks ago. Quite what he was hoping to achieve is unclear. These two ideas entailed redeveloping on the existing site with a 2 to 3 year complete closure. The idea was dropped, presumably on the grounds of lost revenue. In the interest of transparency, these extra ideas should have been included in the consultation so their merits or otherwise could have been aired. The root cause of this PR disaster is that the council had clearly already made up its mind back in September when its cabinet prematurely decided that expanding onto the park was its preferred option. It stepped back from that by putting forward 4 options for public consultation. But the damage has been done. This consultation looks a sham.
And Khalid Aziz writes, "We've much to learn from this charity. To Tanzania to give a keynote speech to an outstanding world charity, which once every 3 years gets its top management together for a review and strategy planning. And what a charity. US-based, and at a time when Americans aren't exactly enjoying a universally positive press, these people are shining examples of how the world could be. Currently, they raise nearly $2 billion, yes, billion dollars a year, which translates into sponsorship of no less than 120 million children across the world. In the next 3 years, they want to increase the number to 150 million sponsored children. Their interventions make a real difference to the children and their families. The money comes mainly from North America through regular monthly giving, something which has never really taken off in the UK. Perhaps it's because we feel so poor, or more likely we're unable to raise our eyes to see just how well off we are. Fundraising is increasing amongst the rising middle classes in the countries where they are currently intervening to alleviate child poverty. A healthy sign that charity is not a one-way street. So why is this charity doing so well? Well, it is Christian-based, and that does seem to provide a real impetus to their activities. But there was little evidence of zealotry, simply a heartfelt desire to do what they see as God's work. During the conference, God was clearly in evidence. His name was mentioned, and passages from the Bible used to illustrate particular points. But there was no sense of it being rammed down your throat. These people approached their work in a thoroughly businesslike manner, a version of the old Salvation Army dictum which asked, "Why should the devil have all the best tunes?" My brief was to inspire the 300 top managers present to raise their game in the field of communications, with a view to helping accelerate them to their goal of sponsoring 150 million children. Certainly lack of passion isn't the issue. They have that in spades. What they wanted to know is more about the nuts and bolts of how it is done. After 40 minutes of me painting a picture of what makes for great communications, there followed a 20-minute session of questions. In the UK and continental Europe, questions are often desultory, but in Africa, the questions came thick and fast, so much so that the session almost doubled in length. These people had an eager thirst for new knowledge. Such thirsts are a byword throughout the disadvantaged in the African continent. Travel about, and you cannot fail to be impressed by the sheer number of schools attended by neatly turned out students. For them, education is a privilege, not a right. Their parents scrimp and save to afford tuition and uniform. No uniform, no school. The school entrances are adorned with encouraging mantras. Education is power. Knowledge has its own reward. And at home, oh, they have so much to teach us.
Now we have a couple of items from our old friend Bel Garum before we get on to the general news. So if you could do the first one, Michael, please.
Right, it's titled, "Infants Are Inspired by Binky's Capital Adventures." The march of Binky the Bear continues. The intrepid Alls for Teddy has headed up the M3 for his latest adventure, and nearly 180 pupils at Sunhill Infant School enjoyed a preview. Pupils sat rapt, as they say, listening to the new book in the series Binky Goes to London. Creators Liz Tankerville and Moira Blackwell visited the Alsford School to work with the two reception classes and to read the new book to the whole school. Afterwards, headteacher Kim Owen-Jones received a donation of 25 Binky Bear books for their new library. Liz and Moira also ran two workshops for both reception classes based on their first book, Binky's Big Adventure. Moira said the children each brought along their own favourite teddy to meet him, and by the end of the workshop, they were able to tell the story using pictures, maps and items from the story. Liz added, "We had a brilliant morning and were so impressed with what the children were able to do in just 45 minutes.
And here's a piece of good news for those that like to eat out in Winchester. It's headed, "Hard Graft Pays Off for Miff and His Restaurant Team." It seems everybody wants a slice of Winchester's culinary offering at the moment. Just days after the Chesil Rectory was lauded in The Times as one of the UK's most romantic restaurants, the same paper has praised the Bangkok Brasserie. Miff Kayum, who's pictured looking extremely happy, the owner of the Thai restaurant on Jury Street, as well as the Kyoto Kitchen and the Bengal Sage, said, "The secret is simple. Hard work. It's absolutely phenomenal to get that kind of recognition for the team," he enthused. "They work so hard, and the restaurant business is hard graft." While some of the spicier dishes at the Brasserie might make your eyes water, the bill will not. They were recognised as one of the top 130 restaurants in the UK, providing a meal for two at under £50.
And with that, we go on to the general news, please, Jean.
And the first piece is headed, "Report Backs Revamp of Station Area." A new report has backed the idea that the area around Winchester Railway Station could be rejuvenated in a multi-million redevelopment. The City Council commissioned a development assessment from planning specialists Tibbalds to look at the potential of the area. The Tibbalds report reveals development could improve a major gateway into Winchester from Andover Road, increase employment whilst maintaining parking for rail users. It will be considered by the Council Cabinet on Wednesday, December the 4th. Councillor Keith Wood, Council Leader, said, "Improvements to the railway station approach, the Carfax site and Andover Road area are something that many have asked for and want to see. The Council agrees that it is a good idea and is working towards an overall master plan for the area. This will, if accepted by Council in due course, form part of our local plan. Stakeholders, including Network Rail, South West Trains, the BID and the City of Winchester Trust, have contributed to the report. Local residents will be consulted as proposals take shape. Public meetings have heard that the area stretching from Gladstone Street to Andover Road, mainly car parks and offices, could be revamped and give the opportunity for high-quality offices and cultural attractions."
Historic plaque found deposited at bank. A bank manager in Winchester has unearthed an important link to his company's past. Steve Allen, manager of NatWest's High Street branch, was tidying up the basement when he stumbled across something he didn't recognise. "It was in a pretty poor state, so I didn't even know what it was," he said. "I took it upstairs, gave it a polish up, and the item turned out to be a plaque dedicated to staff of the National Provincial Bank, as it was known at that time, who served their country during World War I. Mr. Allen said it was a plaque given to the bank to say thank you to the 2,681 members of the Provincial who served in the war, and in honoured memory of the 415 who died. The plaque now sits in the High Street Bank's main hall. It's given the customers something interesting to see, and I think it's important because we talk about things like technology and how important they are to banking, so it's nice to see something that reflects how the bank got where it is today."
And this piece is headed Triathlon Girls Raise £1,000 for Causes, and it's accompanied by a large picture of three bright and happy young ladies about to set off on their bicycles, crunching their way through leaves on a lovely bright autumn day. A trio of schoolgirls have run, swum, cycled and played tennis to raise money for children in Africa and cancer research. The girls were so taken by stories of poverty-stricken childhoods in Uganda that they've taken part in a triathlon. Tilly Swain, Alice Brooks and Lucy Bush, all aged 11 and pupils at Compton C of E Primary School, cycled 4.5 miles, swam 15 lengths at River Park Leisure Centre, played tennis for an hour, and then ran 4 miles last Saturday and raised £1,130. The money will be split between the school in Uganda and cancer research. Tilly of Merton Avenue, Chandler's Ford, said, "We just wanted to help people with cancer and in Uganda. We're quite proud. We didn't think we'd make that much money." Alice of Bournefield's Twyford added, "It's been really good fun, and we've liked doing it, organising it, and trying to get as much money as we can. Our school friends are quite jealous." Lucy of Place Lane, Compton, said, "We really wanted to help those people, and it has been a challenge, but it's gone really well." A proud Victoria Swain, Tilly's mum, said, "They were visited by children from the school in Uganda and were taken aback by the way of life. They're lucky to even get a pencil. The girls were quite upset and so decided to raise the money."
Another piece about the future of Winchester's railway station. Commuters' views sought in survey. Winchester train users are being asked their views to help make their journeys to the station easier. Hampshire County Council is undertaking a survey of the thousands of people who use the station every day. The station was in the spotlight recently after the managing director of Southwest Trains was grilled by some 70 people at a public meeting. The council wants to make it easier for people to get there on foot, by bicycle or bus. The plan and subsequent measures are to be funded from the £4.1 million Local Sustainable Transport Fund bid, awarded by the Department for Transport to the County Council for the My Journey campaign, being rolled out across 6 Hampshire towns. Councillor Sean Woodward, County Council Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, said, "Ideas and suggestions that will help encourage more people to walk, cycle or use the bus for journeys to and from the station and keep the traffic flowing at peak times are welcomed. The survey, which can also be completed online," which we don't normally quote, but I will in this instance, www.myjourneyhampshire.co /Winchester Station Travel Plan will run until December the 31st.
The photograph at the top of this article shows protesters outside the county building in the last-ditch bid to save care homes. Protesters gathered outside Hampshire County Council offices in Winchester last Friday to warn that the closure of 4 care homes will lead to more deaths. Inside, civic chiefs were discussing the proposed closure of Nightingale Lodge in Romsey, Cranley Paddock in Lyndhurst, Deeside in Basingstoke and Bulmer House in Petersfield. Jill Baker, 52, from King Somborne, whose mother is at Nightingale Lodge, said, "Already, since they mentioned the closure, she's been in hospital for a fortnight and they think it's the stress." Around 120 long-term residents, many with dementia and physically frail, would have to move and 190 jobs would be axed. Council bosses say it would cost more than £10 million to modernise the homes built between the 1960s and early 1980s. Problems include small bedrooms with no space for hoists to lift disabled residents. Jill Duncan, the county's director of adult services, said, "We recognise there is a risk to moving people. But people move all the time, and we have a lot of experience of supporting people who do have to move. The decision will now go to the Cabinet on December the 9th, with most of the closures expected to be approved."
Now, here's a story about a local secondary school which has a lot to be proud about. King's strikes gold in sport kite mark. Winchester Secondary recognised for range of extracurricular clubs. They are simply the best. Pupils and staff at a Winchester Secondary School are celebrating after winning a prestigious Sportsmark Gold Award. King's School is amongst only 89 schools nationally to receive the top award from the Sainsbury's School Games Kite Mark Scheme in 2013. The Romsey Road School, which won silver last year, had to demonstrate not only that it embraced sports and PE in the timetable, but it also ran a wide range of extracurricular clubs and took part in fixtures against other schools. The large comprehensive, which has more than 30 extracurricular activities in any one week, also runs B and C sides in a range of sports to give more youngsters a chance to play on the school team. In addition, King's offers sports for its physically disabled pupils, including wheelchair basketball, boccia, and New Age curling clubs, which able-bodied pupils are also encouraged to join. The school teams have had great success, with the wheelchair basketball team getting to the national finals. King's also had to show that it encouraged volunteering and leadership amongst pupils. Talented athletes Harry Talks and Hannah Birch attended the Sainsbury's National Sports Games in Sheffield earlier this year, the only two selected from Hampshire, as part of a National Talent Inspiration Programme for pupils who are both performers and role models. And now the school has also looked at ways it can encourage less sporty pupils to lead a healthier, more active lifestyle. PE teacher Stuart Simpson said, "At King's School, we pride ourselves on the traditional support sports that we run and that have shaped the school's sporting ethos and history. However, we also understand the need to attract all young people to recreational physical activities. And as a result, we now run clubs such as Zumba, intensive fitness workouts, trampoline and health suites." Head teacher Matthew Leeming, who joined the school in September, said, "I'm really delighted about this fabulous achievement. Staff and pupils at the school thoroughly enjoy a wide range of sporting experiences, and they work very hard. This award is a well-deserved recognition of their achievements." And that piece is accompanied by a photograph showing a group of pupils and staff, all of whom are beaming with pride.
Another piece about care homes. A particular one this time. Care home warned to improve services. CQC finds four key safety standards not met. Owners of a Winchester nursing home for pensioners with dementia have been ordered to make urgent improvements to standards of care. The Care Quality Commission, CQC, issued two formal warning notices to Berwick Court Nursing Home after unannounced inspections in February, April, May, June and October. Concerns about the Bupa Run home, which is registered for up to 56 patients, included too few staff, no permanent manager, and risks of residents catching Legionnaire's disease, a form of pneumonia. The under-occupied home failed to meet four of the eight key standards, including staffing levels, monitoring quality of services, and safety of premises. Adam Hughes, Regional Director in the South for CQC, said, "We have met with the provider and have made it clear to them that this continued failure to meet the national standards is completely unacceptable. They have told us that they are taking steps to make the required changes, and we and the local authority are beginning to monitor the situation closely to check that people are safe. People are entitled to be treated in services which are safe, effective, caring, well-led and responsive to their needs. Where a service is failing on any of these grounds, we will expect the provider to improve." The Commission's warning follows an unannounced inspection last month to follow up on earlier concerns. In the latest report, inspectors found that although improvements had been made, there was still cause for concern, including elderly residents still not protected against the risk of Legionnaire's disease, the use of lap straps in wheelchairs and bed rails, forms of restraint when it was not clear from patients' notes if they had given consent or had mental capacity to do so, lack of qualified and experienced staff to meet patients' needs, complaints of too many temporary agency staff, and lack of social activities despite the recruitment of extra staff. Residents complained outings were rare. However, staff always knocked on doors and respected patients' privacy. The choice of food was good, and individual care plans were updated. There had been a recruitment drive to hire more staff. Vivienne Birch, Director of Partnerships, Bupa Care Services, said, "The health and well-being of our residents is our absolute priority. We have taken immediate action and improvements have been seen by the Care Quality Commission. But we appreciate we are not yet at the level we want to reach. We have restructured the staff team and believe the changes we are making will ensure that high standards of care are achieved and maintained."
A bumper crop of acorns has killed more than 60 animals in the New Forest, the worst figure for 7 years. A total of 47 ponies and 16 cattle have died after eating acorns, which are lethal to some species but not others. Now, animal owners are calling for pigs to be given more time to hoover up the deadly crop. Acorns contain toxic tannins that are poisonous to horses, cows and sheep, but pigs, which can eat large numbers of acorns with no ill effect, are released into the forest for at least 60 days to eat fallen acorns, beech mast and chestnuts. This year's pannage season has already been extended by 6 weeks to December the 15th because of the large number of acorns, which can cause colic in ponies and other species, as well as kidney damage. Official verderer Dominic May said, "There are still acorns which have not fallen, and in some places there's a carpet of uneaten acorns under oak trees. It may be that a further extension is appropriate, but we feel it too early to decide now." The agisters, who are employed by the verderers to deal with animal welfare issues in the forest, will review the situation on December the 2nd. Their views will be relayed to the Forestry Commission's most senior officer in the area, Deputy Surveyor Mike Seddon. Mr. May said, "If the agisters recommend an extension, the deputy surveyor will be asked to agree it and pig keepers will be notified of the new end date." Sue Westwood, clerk to the verderers, said, "This year's toll was the highest since 2006, when 47 deaths were recorded. We might only get 4 or 6 deaths in an average year, but every few years we get a glut of acorns, especially when the weather conditions are right. I wouldn't be surprised if there are hardly any in 2014.
A Winchester woman is already looking to expand her business, despite being open only a matter of weeks. Katie Westwood and her partner set up the clothing shop TAG on Parchment Street in September after receiving a government-backed business start-up loan. Miss Westwood was awarded £8,000 from WSX Enterprise and is now looking to expand their operations with a website. The store currently operates a Facebook page for online queries. "We just spotted this gap in the market and decided to go for it," Miss Westwood said. "These are the clothes we want to wear, and there's nowhere to get them in Winchester at the moment. So we thought, let's do it ourselves. We both worked in shops before, so we had a rough idea how it could work."
Chalk streams under threat. Household cleaning items increase phosphorus. Experts have warned that Hampshire's chalk stream rivers are under threat from everyday household cleaning items. Recent studies show that streams of the rivers Test and Itchen have elevated levels of phosphorus, and environmental groups say that domestic cleaning products, particularly dishwasher tablets, are partly to blame. The Itchen failed a recent chemical quality test from the Environment Agency, which predicted it is likely to fall again in 2015, putting it in the at-risk category. The issue was discussed when more than 100 people gathered on Monday at Sparshot College for the Chalk Stream Headwaters Forum, led by the Vitacress Conservation Trust, VCT. Graham Roberts of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust called the condition of the Itchen, a designated special area of conservation, disgusting. He said, "This phosphorus is a real menace. It's changing the whole ecology of the river. It's not rocket science. This needs to be sorted. I have had 27 phone calls and over 109 emails recently, particularly pertinent to the River Itchen. No water should be discharged with a quality worse than when it was abstracted. That's not an unreasonable aim to have. Agricultural runoff, with fertilisers washed off the land and into rivers, also contributes to elevated phosphates, while antiquated sewage works and watercress and fish farms are also cause for concern," the meeting heard. There are 161 chalk rivers in Britain, equal to 96% of the world's total, and most are located in the southeast of England. The problem is exacerbated because in rural areas, such as Cheriton, the vast majority of houses use private drainage, and pollutants can find their way into river systems from residents' septic tanks. Alex Poynter of Birmingham University, who has been researching the issue for the Trust, said the number of cleaning products in the UK containing phosphorus is quite scary. Dr. Steve Rothwell of the VCT said, "The UK is unusual in Europe because many EU countries long ago banned detergent products with phosphorus, and the UK never has. In Hampshire, phosphorus is a big problem. You get too much algae growing in the rivers as a result, and it starts to outcompete the other plants you want. We know septic tanks are a problem. The chalk streams are so clear because they lack phosphorus, but if you add any, it's like adding fertiliser, and you get all this growth."
This piece is headed, "We're ready for winter," says the council. "We're ready for a big freeze." That was the message from the council bosses as Hampshire prepares for any severe weather it might have to face in the coming months. Hampshire County Council says it has 16,000 tonnes of salt and 60 salting lorries on hand to keep roads ice-free, enough for 15 days' continuous salting throughout the county and equal to about 75,000 miles of road. There are also 3,000 community salt bins around Hampshire to help keep pavements and smaller roads clear, while 120 farmers and contractors will be on standby with snow ploughs. Councillor Sian Woodward, responsible for economy, transport and environment for the county, said, "After the harsh conditions of the past 3 years, we are ready to face the oncoming winter months. We are committed to making sure, as far as possible, that people can access health services, get to work, school and the shops during freezing temperatures. Priority one routes, that's A roads, some B roads and major bus, emergency and school routes, will be routinely treated by the council contractors AMI whenever temperatures drop below 0 degrees centigrade. Meanwhile, ice detection systems have been set up to get a head start on the freeze." She said, "I've been out to see the mounds of salt and new vehicles we have, and I know we have a plan and are fully prepared for the weather. Halfords is warning drivers to plan ahead for the cold snaps and recommends equipment such as high visibility coats, snow grips for shoes and spray-on snow chains for tyres." David Poulter, Hampshire's Director of Auto Trading, said, "The best defence against the elements is forward planning. And those drivers that carry the right equipment with them are most likely to remain safe and mobile." Councillor Woodward urged people to be vigilant and play their part in keeping traffic moving. He said, "We all have a part to play in keeping Hampshire's roads moving, and I would ask people to always consider if their journey is essential during bad weather, to drive according to conditions, and to remember that even if a road surface looks black, it doesn't mean that it's free of ice."
This next piece tells us that reoffending rates are down thanks to a new probation scheme. Officials say a pioneering scheme in Hampshire has caused a dramatic fall in reoffending rates. Hampshire Probation Trust says the new approach to dealing with the county's most prolific offenders has seen a fall of more than 60% in the last 2 years. Integrated Offender Management, IOM, was launched in 2011 and brings together the Trust, Hampshire Constabulary, Winchester Prison and local authorities in an effort to monitor those at risk of reoffending. IOM teams work together in one place, such as a council office or a police station, improving communication between agencies. Barry Crook, Chief Executive of the Hampshire Probation Trust, said that of the 236 people registered on the scheme, there was a 63% drop in the number of times they were taken into custody. He also said that there was a 73% reduction in offences that they were arrested for, and a 71% reduction in the number of crimes they were charged with. At a meeting in Winchester last Friday, Mr. Crook said, "We should not be complacent about these figures, but the public can sometimes be left with the impression that nothing is being done. But this is not the case. No one agency on its own can make an impact on reoffending. It's about having one agreed plan for each offender with which we're working." The meeting also heard from Chief Superintendent Richard Rowland, who said, "As a police officer, I'm here to reduce crime, and breaking the cycle of reoffending is one of the top ways of doing that. But I have learnt that we can't do it on our own." Also present were ex-offenders who benefited from the programme. Ben, 24, from Andover, said he was approached by the IOM team during his second spell in Winchester Prison. He's now running his own business and is soon to become a father. He said, "Nobody from the team was just passing the buck. Before, I was always just somebody else's problem. The support I got was the main thing, and my life has changed completely."
Town's police stretched due to cutbacks, says PC. Police in Bishop's Waltham are stretched because they have to cover towns in the far north of the county, an officer has revealed. PC Simon Pauls told a recent parish council meeting that cutbacks mean officers are patrolling as far afield as Farnborough and Alton. He said, "The thin blue line has got so thin it's almost transparent. It's a trying time for Hampshire Constabulary." It is understood that Hampshire Constabulary's budget currently stands at about £300 million, and it must be slashed. They've got to slash that by another £25 million. The last 4 years have already seen cutbacks of £55 million. Assistant Chief Constable David Pride said recently that it would be jolly difficult to cut the extra £25 million. "The last place we're going to take people from, if we can possibly avoid it, is the front line. But I cannot give you a guarantee in terms of numbers," he said. In September, the Chronicle revealed police were proposing to move a team of officers out of Bishop's Waltham Police Station, but later dropped the plans. Inquiries by the Chronicle prompted the Constabulary to say it had been considering relocating 10 officers in its targeted patrol team to Winchester. The move raised concerns about quality of service, including longer response times to incidents in the Meon Valley.
Three sites on the agenda for housing, and up to 250 could be built in Kingsworthy, says the heading. Villagers have mixed feelings over three proposed development sites at Kingsworthy. More than 200 people visited St Mary's Church when the exhibition first went on display, with dozens more turning out at Tubbs Hall last Wednesday. The sites include Topfield at Hookpit Farm Lane, Loveden Lane, and a site at the former Kingsworthy House near Eversley Park. Sites quickly eradicated from the proposal included land at Woodlands Farm, which contains an ancient monument. Parish Councillor Ian Gordon said, "When Winchester City Council put forward their local plan part one, we were aware we would have to start making some plans with somewhere between 200 and 250 houses. When the inspector came, he said all the parishes of our size had to aim for the higher figure. We've had to come up with these now. We can't wait until 2031 because the government said we've got to do this, and we've come up with some viable options with what the council has set out." However, Councillor Gordon said the plan has not been without its problems. "It looks great when they say they'll give us open green space to the parish, but we've still got to find the money to maintain it, so we're in a bit of a catch-22. Opposition to these sites was voiced boisterously by members of the recently formed Topfield Action Group, which has gathered some 120 signatures on a petition supporting their cause so far. Chair of the group, Rosemary Clark, said, "I've lived near this site for 20 years, and it used to be dog walkers and horse riders and children learning to ride their bikes. It's a safe environment, but that's just why there's a problem with the development." Secretary to the group, Sandy Evans, said, "We're not saying don't build, we're just saying don't build here. It's the last bit of natural open space left in Kingsworthy, and we've evidence of the wildlife that lives here." The consultation period for the proposal ends on January the 10th next year. Daniel Dearman, 32, a personal assistant from Kingsworthy, said of the proposals, "I think it's a great idea that the public are being consulted, and it's good to find out more about the whole process." Dr. Jeff Greenleaf, 72, of Woodland, said, "I am absolutely horrified. I don't see why we need all these houses. What we need is open space. There is no infrastructure provided, and thought has to be given to it. The legacy of a green belt has long gone." Don Messingham, 68, retired of Springvale Road, said, "It's just going to make the traffic an absolute nightmare. It's just going to become another Barton farm." Hazel Bulchin, 64, retired at Ramsey Road, said, "When I first moved here over 30 years ago, there was nothing much here at all. Yet they march in here all snobby, complaining it's going to be another Stanmore. And I get so angry about it. Everyone's got to live somewhere. I don't like the building work, but if it's got to happen, so be it."
And now here's a piece about proposals for a local solar farm. Winchester planners have approved the first major solar farm in the area, but say it does not set a precedent. Some 50,000 photovoltaic panels are set to be erected on three fields between Aylesford and Bishop Sutton. Councillors on the planning committee were divided over what is, in effect, a power station, with three voting against and seven in favour. Councillor Kim Gottlieb asked if granting permission would create a precedent for other local applications. But Julie Pinnock, head of development at the council, said not, with each proposal being considered on its merits. "I don't think it would set a precedent if it was allowed here," she said. There's currently another proposal for farmland at Itchinstoke and a large one at Southwark near Fareham. Small solar farms have been erected on former landfill sites at Funtley and Shedfield in the southern parishes. The committee heard that the Bishop Sutton solar farm, 300 metres from the nearest house, will be invisible from most places and so would have little impact on the landscape. It's currently farmed by Western Court Farm. But villagers from Bishop Sutton spoke out against the proposals, concerned about what they referred to as the industrialisation of the countryside. Parish Council Chairman Aileen Miller said, "Solar parks should not be built on greenfield sites or in appropriate parts of the countryside. The need for renewable energy should not override environmental protection, and the Minister, Greg Barker, has directed planners to turn down such applications." Another villager, Martin Henderson, said, "I support solar farms, but there is a right place, and land off Whitehill Lane is not the right place. The size is disproportionate to the location, and it will harm the character and appearance of the countryside." But Councillor Frank Pearson said it was a good site, and added, directly addressing the opponents, "This might be a facetious question. Do you use electricity now, and will you use it in the future?" Local ward member Councillor Harry Verney said, "It's going to fill a gap in the area with a virtual industrial estate." The planning permission will be for 25 years, and the land will not be considered brownfield. If the solar farm is removed, it must be returned to farmland. Applicants Beta Solar says the 2,108 solar arrays, each with 24 photovoltaic panels, could generate enough power for between 3,500 and 5,000 homes. There were 26 objections and 4 letters of support, including Aylesford Town Council. Mark Candlish, speaking for Beta, said in 20 years' time solar would be the cheapest form of energy. Among the letters of support was from TV presenter Charlie Otley from Tichborne, who in 2011 made a film with Prince Charles about Carpathia, and he said the site was remote and would be invisible from most perspectives, and the visual impact was negligible.
Pledge to safeguard at-risk species. Hampshire's conservation chief has vowed to redouble efforts to secure a future for wildlife in the county. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust Chief Executive Debbie Tan's pledge comes in the wake of a shocking report that revealed how some species were on the verge of extinction. The State of Nature report was launched by Sir David Attenborough earlier this year. It showed how 60% of native species, from hedgehogs to bumblebees, had declined in recent years, and some species were discovered to be in danger of being wiped out. Hampshire's native white-clawed crayfish has declined by 95% since the 1970s, and the county now has just one viable population left, the report revealed. It also reported that the marsh fritillary butterfly, once found in wet meadows across North Hampshire, is now extinct, and its habitat has been reduced to mere fragments. Meanwhile, wetland birds such as the lapwing and redshank have not been seen in their once native Itchen Valley for several years. The report prompted the Trust to launch its own investigation into whether all the county's wildlife was in as poor shape as the national picture. Now the Trust has revealed that although the overall trends are similar, there is some good news. The number of species of overwintering wetland birds, ducks, geese and swans are increasing. Hampshire is still providing a home to 44 of the UK's 147 endangered and critically endangered plants. Some rare butterflies are breeding successfully in the county, and the decline of eelgrass beds has been arrested. In addition, the Trust is working to improve and protect nature and landscapes for the benefit of wildlife. An example is work at Winnell Moors near Winchester, which has reconnected the River Itchen to its floodplain meadows. Ms Tan, pictured, said, "It is not all bad news for our two counties, but the State of Nature report is a timely reminder that we must redouble our efforts to secure a future for wildlife. Our local wildlife is not immune from national trends. By understanding what is happening, we can direct our efforts to where it may best help wildlife. Over the next 5 years, the Trust needs to be even bolder than it has been in the past. We need habitats that are bigger, in better condition, and that join up with one another. Everyone has a part to play, from creating the smallest wildlife garden right through to managing their farm with wildlife in mind."
Concern over benefit changes. Winchester Citizens Advice Bureau is worried that many people will not be ready to deal with major changes to benefit payments. A national CAB survey revealed 22% don't have basic banking services needed to deal with universal credit. Some 49% are not ready to complete online application forms for the new benefit. Despite only 6% of adults in the UK not having a basic bank account, more than a fifth of CAB clients set to receive the new benefit say they do not have the necessary services, such as direct debits. Jenny Meadows, Chief Executive of Winchester District CAB, said, "Staff and volunteers at Winchester District CAB will work tirelessly to help people manage the upheaval, but we need much clearer, stronger guidance from government about how people moving into the new system will be supported. The research by CAB shows how risky it is to plough ahead with this huge new reform without taking the time to get the details right." She added, "We'll be working closely with Winchester City Council to deliver these changes safely, but we need government to address the problems that our survey has highlighted."
Campaigners handed out white ribbons in Winchester city centre on Monday to raise awareness of domestic violence. Representatives of the Winchester Domestic Violence and Abuse Forum took part in an international campaign. Anne Craig, chairman, said, "Alarmingly, in 90% of cases of domestic violence and abuse, children are in the same or the next room when violence occurs."
Ellis wins MP's card contest. An Itchen Abbas primary school boy will have his drawing sent to some of Britain's top political figures this year after winning a Christmas card competition. Ellis Gauntlet Boak 4 years old, won MP Steve Brine's competition for his picture of a robin wearing a hat and scarf. His picture will adorn Christmas cards to be sent by Mr. Brine to the Prime Minister, Buckingham Palace, and local community groups and charities. Local artist Judy Strafford judged the competition, which also saw commendations handed out to several other children, including Alexander Roots from Sherborne House, Rhys McBride from South Wadston Primary, and Summer Osborne, Elizabeth Groves, Katie Blatchford, and Isabel Andrews from Prince's Mead. Ellis was presented with a family ticket to see the Theatre Royal Panto of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And there's a lovely photograph of Ellis holding up his winning picture with his mum, Sarah, Itchen Abbas Primary School head teacher Andrew Robson, and Steve Brine, all looking very happy indeed.
St. Faith's Meadow reopens. St. Faith's Meadow and St. Cross reopens this Saturday, November the 30th. Conservation work carried out by Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust over the past 12 months is now complete. Visitors will be able to meet Wildlife Trust staff at the site on the southern edge of Winchester from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. and hear how the work will benefit wildlife and people. There will be opportunity to ask questions, activities for all the family, and local interpretation signs will explain the story of St. Faith's Meadow and the value of the conservation work.
And that concludes the extras for the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. Thanks to the copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Jean Carswell.
Goodbye.
Michael Wyard.
Goodbye.
John Regan.
Bye-bye.
And from me, Vara Williams. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Goodbye.